The big swearing-in ceremonies took place earlier this month, but February is now when the odd-year sessions of the Oregon legislature truly get down to business. The odd-year sessions are the big ones because they set the budget for state government for the two-year biennium starting July 1st. A lot of the faces are the same in Salem, but the Democrats increased their majorities in both houses of the legislature, which means the Democrats run the committees and the sessions in House and Senate. Tina Kotek is the House Speaker, the first person in 10 years to run consecutive sessions of the Oregon House. She represents District 44 in North and Northeast Portland, and she's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Speaker Kotek, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So why is it that you're the first Speaker of the House to serve consecutive sessions in 10 years?
Well, we've had a lot of change. It's certainly a privilege to have the opportunity to do it for two more years. We had term limits. We had changes. Jeff Merkley was the speaker when I first entered the legislature. Then he ran for the Senate. And then we had Dave Hunt. Then we had changes in 2010 with we went to an evenly split House, so we had co-speakers. So we just had a lot of change in the last decade. I think having continuity and leadership is good for the chamber. You know how to run the ship, you know the process. I'm looking forward to doing it two more years.
I guess it's safe to assume nothing about the job scared you away 2 years ago, but what were some of the real challenges in learning the ropes as a first-time speaker?
There is a lot to learn. One of the things you don't realize when you take that job is not only are you managing the day-to-day operations of the legislature, but just the branch itself, what happens in the actual Capitol building. I would do that in conjunction with the Senate president. So there's a lot of day-to-day operational issues related to the Capitol as the people's building. Learning to understand how you meet the needs of 59 other people. I am very lucky to represent North and Northeast Portland. That is my primary responsibility. But as a speaker, I represent the whole state. I have to manage the needs and issues related to every district in the state. And that's a learning curve. And I'm looking forward to putting the experience over 2 years back to work on behalf of everybody in the state.
I've often wondered about how a speaker divides up those roles, though, because you do still represent a district yourself. So do you plan to introduce any bills on behalf of your district? Do you let the other House members take care of all that sort of thing?
Well, I try to let the other House members take the lead so I can, stand back a bit from individual pieces of legislation. The one bill I do have my name on this year is something I've worked on for several years, which is early childhood education, which affects not only my district, it's around child care supports for working parents, but that affects every part of the state. Particular district issues, we do our best on constituent concerns, and I will sign on to other bills as the legislature moves on, but I think trying to let the other members have their priorities is a good role for me to take.
Well, Democrats are greater in number, obviously, than 2 years ago. We watched in the past in Oregon as the majority party would not, for example, let bills out of committee unless a majority of members of that party, therefore a minority of the whole House, approved. I mean, is there any bar you've set for approval within the caucus that lets bills get out of committee and onto the floor?
Well, we have a very strong committee structure here in the state of Oregon. I don't think people realize we don't amend anything on the floor. Everything happens in committee. And I met with all 59 members to figure out where they could best serve in committee. So we have very evenly distributed. Certainly there's a majority and minority, but I feel like we have good experience on all the committees. As far as what comes out of individual committees, it's really up to the chairs and to read the support in their own committee. We have bipartisan support for about 95-98% of the bills that we do in Salem, and there's occasionally those bills that really do move only on a very split vote. But those are pretty rare. I think, for me, we protect the rules of the minority in our House rules, that if you're not in agreement with a bill that's been voted out of committee, the minority does have the ability to offer a minority report, an alternate version of the bill that does then get voted on the floor. So we try to have as much transparent process as possible because I think that is good for the legislature and good for democracy. But, at the end of the day, it does come down to votes. So, people with the most votes will tend to move things, and that's just how our system works.
But, so there are safeguards, you're saying, to keep the minority party from feeling like they're getting rolled?
I believe there are. Now, I think that's, it's all about making sure people feel heard. And I believe, from my perspective, having met with all the members, people are satisfied with their committee appointments. They feel like there are, you know, we didn't stack them in any particular way. We have people of varying perspectives on the committee, so that drives good debate. And also, if a committee chair is for some reason being unreasonable, which I think is rare, you know, if you have a majority of members on the committee who want to have a bill heard, there is a rule for that. There is the ability to do that. And that has happened in the past where you'll have people crossing the aisle to say to the chair, you really do need to hear this bill. So that is a possibility that can happen. And, you know, I think every member represents their districts well, and they need to be heard. So my job is to make sure the process is fair.
Tina Kotek is the Speaker of the Oregon House, Democrat from District 44 in North and Northeast Portland. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the business of this year's legislature. 800-838-3760 throughout the region, 800-838-3760. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Steve in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Howdy. I have a question and sort of a customer comment. Question is it too late to for a citizen to present something to be discussed in the session of the legislature? There are two bills that I'd especially like to see considered. One is the fact that if you are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, as is the case with Port of Portland, Port of Coos Bay, LTD in Eugene, and now the school system and the boards that are running the several universities, you are not subject to recall by the people. You're serving at the pleasure of the governor. There's only one guy in the state that can fire you. And this is a part of the Constitution.
All right. So
this be amended in the legislature and then sent to people to be voted on?
And you had one of the two, I thought you said. Were there two bills you had in mind?
That's the first one. I've got a second one, which is the Death with Dignity Act. If you have if you are eligible under the Dignity Act, you have to be within 6 months of dying and mentally competent. If you have Alzheimer's or dementia, I've known people who've gone through this for 5 years. By the time you're 6 months from dying, you're drooling and in diapers. You have no access to this bill whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine there are a number of people out there that would take advantage of it if they could, but they can't.
All right, let's get a sense of this from the speaker, Steve. Thanks for the call. Appreciate that.
Steve, great questions. Okay, let me start from the top. At this point, members do have the ability to introduce bills. They have a limited number at this point to introduce, and we have tight timelines. So the clock starts ticking next Monday, so things will move quickly. But I would urge you to reach out to your individual House member or Senate and see if they'd be willing to introduce a constituent bill. Each member is a little different on how they handle these at this point, but so there is still a possibility, but the clock is ticking. In terms of the appointments by the governor, they really vary depending on the position. And, you know, if there was one particular thing that you were concerned about, I would, suggest that you write a very targeted bill around a particular type of appointment. But yes, in most cases, when the governor appoints, unless there's, you know, major upheaval, the governor is the only one who can remove individuals from certain appointments. But that is not always the case. Some of them are driven by other boards as well. So it really depends on the appointment. Lastly, Death with Dignity. Representative Mitch Greenlick, who is the chair of our House Health Care Committee, I believe is actually working on a bill to amend our Death with Dignity statute regarding individuals with memory issues. Now, whether or not we do that, I don't know, but I would encourage you to reach out to his office, Representative Mitch Greenlick, who's our House Health Care Committee chair. He is working on a bill related to that.
All right, Steve, thanks for those questions. And Paul in Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Oregon House Speaker Tina Kotek.
Good morning, Madam Speaker, and good morning, Jeffrey.
Howdy.
Nothing pithy today. I'm wondering what the odds are of getting a GMO labeling bill through this particular legislature and whether anyone's working on that, as well as some kind of legislation to curb the use of herbicides and pesticides in the state of Oregon? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Well, good morning, Paul. Thanks for the questions. On the GMO issue, if you recall, there was a task force set up by the governor regarding GMO crops in the state. He is recommending a bill from that task force. I don't think it'll be specific to labeling, but it'll be around how do you share agricultural space with GMO and non-GMO crops. So we're looking forward to seeing what he's got in that bill. I would assume we'll see a labeling bill. I don't know about its success. Obviously, the measure was very tight at the ballot, but it will depend on how it's drafted. I have not seen one yet, but there might be one in the mix that I'm not aware of. And the last question about pesticide, I know there'll be a bill related to aerial spraying to try to make sure that we keep communities safer when pesticides are being sprayed. There are a couple different proposals, one that's more about having higher licensing and regulatory process for the people who do it. There's also one about creating actual buffers in certain areas when you are spraying. I expect a very robust discussion about that this session.
Tina Kotek is the Speaker of the Oregon House and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You can call in questions and email them as well, 800-838-3760 around the listening area, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Big story of any odd year's session is you got to do the two-year budget, but you also have July 1st, not just the next biennium starting, but marijuana turning legal in Oregon. How much activity is required of the legislature versus what has to go on in departments like the OLCC to come up with administrative rules to implement marijuana going legal?
Oh, good question. The implementation of Measure 91 will take up a good amount of activity during the session. The measure didn't get it completely right, so it's our understanding we need a few housekeeping tweaks, just even if we did nothing. OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, is doing listening sessions around the state around what people think. They've just started that. They will set the kind of the rules to implement the program. Our job at the legislature is to look at the measure, make sure we have all the ins and outs of it right. I think there's a really big interest in making sure we get the safety issues right, we get the edible issue right. There is the outlying issue of could local jurisdictions be taxing if they got their tax measures in before the ballot was actually approved by voters. So there's a whole host of issues. We have a bipartisan, bicameral committee that is working on it, and they will be having evening committee hearings, and they are already looking at, there's I think 6 or 7 bills already available. Also, how the medical marijuana program will operate as it relates to the legalized sale is also an issue that's under consideration. So will be a big topic no matter what. Just there are a lot of details, and I think we want to make sure we have public input in making sure that we do get it right. There's no interest, I think, in overturning all of Measure 91. I think it's making sure we get all of the sideboards and the regulations correct as we, implement a brand new industry that people certainly have concerns about.
Here's another call from Jeff in Roseburg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Oregon House Speaker Tina Kotek.
I wanted to ask what the gun control bills are that here are coming up. The universal background check requires gun registration, which I don't think is appropriate. But
well, is that a fact? Oh, wait. Because where is it passed that it requires registration too?
Well, there's only you can't have universal background checks if a gun can be one place and then show up at another place. So you have to have everything registered.
Well, let's explore this with the speaker. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Speaker Kotek, what is in the hopper in the way of gun control bills?
Yes, Jeff, thanks for the question. There are no bills, I think, that I am aware of to register people's guns, so I understand the concern there. There is some interest in looking at closing remaining loopholes that are out there regarding background checks, in particular types of sales. We do have, some background checks more than other states, but there are some loopholes that some legislators are wanting to close. I expect that would be really the only bill of major implications for gun ownership would be that background check bill that could possibly get done this session.
Curious just to know about procedure here, because there's always the possibility that the Michael Bloomberg-backed campaign, which passed a background check measure in Washington State, will do the same thing in Oregon. When you see something like that coming down the pike, is it almost worth it for the legislature just to stand aside and let that process play out?
Well, I think some people might want to take that route. I'm a believer in the legislative process. I think having legislators really looking at the bills and understanding all the consequences, good and bad, from them before they pass something is a preferable route. And on something as complicated as background checks and gun safety, we want to make sure we get it right. So we're gonna try, and I think that would be preferable than having a big battle at the ballot next November.
So, Speaker Kotek, to the budget now, with state income rising, do you feel like you're breathing a little easier than you were 2 years ago?
Well, certainly our resources have stabilized, and the budget framework that the co-chairs put out 2 weeks ago to get our budget conversation started puts us in a much better position. We're able to make new investments in education, which is our top priority, both from early childhood all the way up to higher education. But, it's not a budget that I think every Oregonian would think is what we want to do for the state. You'll see in their document that we still don't have the resources to make the game-changing investments we need in our educational system. If everyone is going to have an opportunity to get new skills, get the education they need, be successful in school. So we're going to have a good budget. I don't think we're going to answer all the state's questions with it. The other issue around the economic recovery that we will be dealing with is, while job creation and jobs have definitely increased in the state, what kind of jobs have been created since the recession is a big concern for many of us. They're not the same living wage jobs that were there before the recession. So a lot of us are concerned about, are people working hard and getting ahead? There'll be a discussion about minimum wage. There'll be a discussion about making sure you have access to paid sick time when you're ill or you have a family member that's ill. Those kind of basic workplace issues will also be front and center in the legislature.
When we begin to talk about education, and you mentioned an early childhood bill that you're part of here, there's also the discussion about trying to make sure that we beef up funding for the community colleges. This is independent of what President Obama said last week about trying to make community college free. It seems like we're all pretty well settled on a lot of attention on K-12. It looks like on the edges of that, either before or after, there's a bit of disagreement about where the money is best spent.
Well, it is. I think there's agreement that we need to fund education. The challenge becomes, how do you prioritize all those resources? And you will see in the budget that was put out by co-chairs, there is new investments in early childhood. There are a stable budget for K-12. Stronger investments in community colleges and the four-year universities, because we are now in the resource position to start doing that. Our goal is to make higher education more affordable. And community college is a really important part of that continuum that I think, as you can tell from the president on down, there's a lot of focus. So how do community colleges function at the top of their game for individuals who either want a two-year degree to go to a four-year degree or just need, a year-long program to get a new skill set to get a job? Community colleges will have a big focus during the session.
Will even the number proposed for K-12 education reduce class sizes, Speaker Kotek?
Depends on the district. Some districts are in different positions by virtue of the types of, the students they have. We will not substantially reduce class size with the budget we're proposing. We won't lengthen the school year. That's why I'm talking about game-changing investments. By next year, I think we're going to have to start talking about larger tax reform to see if there are, additional dollars we can put into education. But the budget we're drafting is strong. It's stable. But in terms of really doing everything people want, I think we're far from doing that.
Well, you certainly can't catch up probably in one biennium, but it seems like it's hard to do anyway because the costs seem to rise faster than inflation. Is that my perception being skewed here?
Well, we have been successful in holding down the cost of health care through the health care reforms that have been going on both nationally and at the state level. So I think school districts, for example, are really seeing their health care costs stabilize. We did some work, very difficult political work, around the pension system that has also stabilized some of those costs. The reality is, at some point, you have to put more in than just maintain the costs or keep the costs down. I think we're actually making some headway on keeping the cost level.
All right. So you're talking about a different sort of system where you get more money into the system other than just kind of holding where you are.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very human capital intensive system. You if you want smaller class sizes, you need more teachers. I mean, it's just a numbers issue at some point.
Let us take another call. We have Grumpy John and Grants Pass on the line with Oregon House Speaker Tina Kotek.
Thanks. This is follow-up on the herbicide question. The LNG pipeline is going to cross 400 streams and the Rogue River, and the buffer zones for forestry products are inadequate as is, but that LNG pipeline might not even pay attention to those buffers and all the herbicides that they're going to be continually spraying in order to keep the huge right-of-way across our lands. It's going to be saturated in herbicides, and I think that alone should make the LNG pipeline ineligible for existence. But I would like to know what you're going to do to protect our waters from that particular source, in addition to increasing the buffer zones in the forestry.
All right. Thanks, Grumpy John.
John, great question. You know, you are the first person who's raised that issue with me. I don't know what the regulations are in terms of maintaining the buffer zone on a pipeline project like the one proposed for Jordan Cove. So I don't really know the answer to that question. I do, like I said earlier, we have differing perspectives on the aerial spraying issue or just pesticide application out in, you know, in the forest areas in general. And I expect we'll be seeing a lot of discussion on how best to do that, whether it's, expanding the zones or making sure the people who actually are dispensing the pesticides are better trained. At this point, I think we could use more licensing in that regard, so I think you're going to see a combination of those two approaches.
You touched briefly, Speaker Kotek, on a revamping of the tax system. Governor Kitzhaber said he didn't think Oregon's in much of a mood to have that discussion, but as leaders, you, Peter Courtney, and the governor, I mean, can you begin to lead in a direction of having that discussion?
I think the strongest case we can make this year is, are we spending the money wisely? Are we, making government effective and efficient? And then go from there and say, but we still have a gap. And I think if people understand the gap, when we get to the tax discussion, they'll be more inclined to go there with us as voters.
All right. Tina Kotek is the Speaker of the Oregon House and a representative herself from District 44. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff. You have a good one.
You too.